Real quick, guys, if you want to take your real estate investing business from 6 to 7 figures in the next 12 months, and you want to do it without being a slave to your business, then you have to check out our Scale community. You can get the full details at collectingkeys.com/scale, but very basically, it is a community of like-minded investors who are working to become the absolute top-tier investors in their market. Along with 3 coaching calls per week led by Dan and myself, we also have a whole bunch of videos and materials that go into all the different SOPs that we use to run our business on a daily basis. This includes how we manage our sales team, how we hire, how we do our marketing systems, how we get the best assignment fees possible, how we do renovations, how we do all the different kinds of creative financing. And if you are serious about taking your real estate business to the next level, it is absolutely something that you should check out. So go to collectingkeys.com/scale, see all the details and see if you're a good fit. If you're doing residential, honestly, you're paying penny slots. You can spend it like a bunch of times. You get a lot of things. Every now and then you'll get a winner.
Yeah.
Half the time you'll get nothing. The thing is, when you're doing like commercial stuff, you're doing like $1,000 slots.
Yeah.
Like when you hit, you're going to make a shit ton of money, but you're going to have to spend a lot of time just to even get the capital to get started. Yeah. What is going on, guys? Welcome to today's episode of the Collecting Keys Real Estate Investing Podcast. Today is Wednesday. This is the Mike and Dan Show. If it is your first time here, we are the show where we teach you to make massive income, not just passive income with your real estate investing business. And I am Mike DeHaan here with my co-host, Dan Austin.
Hey,
and on these Wednesday shows, we talk about real estate investing, business, and whatever else we feel like for the week. So we are here mid-April, and I'm pretty stoked, man. I just sold one of my rentals. It was my old primary home, so I got it all that tax-free. And it ended up being, all in all, about a $300,000 gain from when I bought it to when I sold it. And if you want to know my secret, I bought a property before 2020 and it happened to be in one of the luckiest markets in the country that appreciated rapidly. And sorry guys.
I'll continue to argue that you can't be lucky if you're not playing the game.
For sure. Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
So not everybody had dumb luck. Everybody decided at that point in time that invested in real estate to make a very educated decision.
Yeah.
And because of that, you won.
Yeah. I mean, you're in the game long enough, you're eventually going to hit a home run. And if you just happen to be in a period where you have a crappy pitcher, you can hit a lot of home runs in a very short period of time.
Yeah. You can't win the lottery if you're not playing.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I know it's funny, like thinking back to then though, too, because there was so many little things. I mean, we were both in real estate. That was my primary home that I bought in 2017. But even after that, when I started buying rentals in 2018 and 2019, the way that we would look at like cash flow and like appreciation, all that sort of stuff. I mean, we were underwriting things with 5.5% to 6% interest rates and the appreciation that we were expecting, what they used to say, like 2 to 3% per year. And that's how we would analyze like the...
I never even thought about appreciation happening. Like when I was buying rent property, I was like, I guess this is the value it should always be. And I was happy with that the way I was buying it because like I was first and foremost looking at the cash flow position and I recognized that rents would likely go up over time.
Yeah.
But I never thought about the value of the property going up. Now, obviously, as an educated investor, I recognize that that's a real thing, up and down. Now we're realizing it could go down.
Yeah. And for a lot of people, are like,
doesn't just go up anymore.
I know. I mean, even this property, right? So I bought it for $210,000. I sold it for $520,000. If I'd sold it a couple of years ago, I probably could have sold it for more.
Yeah,
$530,000, $540,000 at that point. But it was impossible to know when the peak of the market was going to be. Because also, if I had missed the peak and I tried to sell it later, like if I tried to sell it like last fall, like fall 2023, I probably would have only got like $470,000 or $480,000. But the market rate starting to turn around, being springtime up here in the Northwest, a pretty easy sale. It's also is like honestly a great house at a really, really awesome location. So that helps too. But so it's been, you know, that's my sort of big win along with all the other transactions that we have closing. But it's been interesting looking at April versus March because March our lead flow was insanely high. And April we're actually looking kind of quiet in comparison.
Yeah.
Like I bet that we will figure out April with 50 to 60% of the leads that we had in March. And I have no idea why. I think it's just like, I don't know, everyone's past the selling season now. Are people moving on?
Spring break, bro.
Honestly, maybe a little bit.
People with kids too, they travel, they don't do anything, or they're at home with their kids and they're going crazy. So they're, you know, they're not used to that. They got to figure out work schedules.
Yeah.
Last thing they're thinking about is selling their house fast for cash.
There's probably a little bit of that, but how many of our sellers have kids and they're going on spring break, dude? Most of them can't afford to pay their mortgage.
Well, that's not, it's not even that they're traveling though. It's that they're like, oh shit, my kids are at home. I have to figure out what to do with them. And you know, it's just tough. You know?
Yeah. That's probably one of the more legitimate issues is I always look at like kind of the news and think about, is there something that's spooking people? You know, especially because it's an election year. And so going into every election year, surprise, we have a new foreign conflict. It's going to be the next World War III and the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Every 4 years that happens, people are like, they get so surprised.
Yeah.
Like at this point, you should just expect it. It's part of the election cycle.
Dude, there's a three front war going on. If you're looking at the, European countries as the allies against all these other people, if you kind of look how it's being positioned, right? You've got Russia. Now you have Iran and you had Hamas, which is, I guess, by Iran, a conduit of Iran, but it's like, who else are they going to throw at us?
I know.
You got to have the enemy team to fight together.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And they just like, because they go, what countries have had a Bond villain over the last 50 years? That's what they're going to make is their little squad. But with things like that, though, I mean, it does affect real estate, right? And like people's perspectives.
It affects a lot of things. And it definitely should. You should at least have some like recognition of geopolitics and what's going on in your world. But like, you know, you can't, in my opinion, I can't control that. And I can't change if like World War III, it breaks out. But what I can do is continue to invest like I would if it didn't happen. And the best case scenario, this is what I was telling somebody the other day. They were kind of like, well, aren't you worried about this when you're investing? I'm like, okay, so here's the way I look at it is if the entire world implodes, nuclear war, we're all screwed.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. At that point, it matters. Do you have bullets, cigarettes, and alcohol? Those are the only things that matter at that point in time. Cash, money, assets, it doesn't matter, right? And so if we're all there, we're all kind of bumped down to the same level. And then it's primitive, like actual like fighting, like as far as like whoever is the best is going to rise to the top, whoever can control the most, right? So we all get to start from zero.
Yeah.
The other scenario though, that doesn't happen and I stay invested, I keep growing, I keep working and I'm still better off than the average person.
That's true.
So to me, it's like, why bank on worst case when you should bank on best case? Because worst case, you're screwed anyways. There's nothing you could do.
Yeah.
Hoarding cash and gold shekels is not going to like do anything for you at that point in time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I mean, and even all the other people try to hoard at that point, you know, talking about like bullets, to be honest, 95% of people listening, you're going to be completely screwed at that point anyway.
Right. Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. That's always my favorite is you have these guys that think that they would be able to, I don't know, hold up against like the US military if there was like some sort of coup. It's like, you're so screwed. Yeah.
Tanked.
Right. Or even like the random person that fancies themselves a survivalist. I was like, with some of these North Idaho people that are like legit fucking psychos come down, like you're in big trouble. Yeah,
those dudes live for this shit.
Dude, yeah, they have literally been training. Like they have training camps that are not that different from the Al-Qaeda ones that they used to show us in early 2000s propaganda.
That shit's all over the North Idaho, dude. They're ready. Oh, they got their militias. They're down, dude.
I mean, it's just interesting to always try and get into the mind of sellers. But one thing that is interesting right now, though, is I mean, we've talked about the commercial real estate space for a while and how much that's turning over. Some of these deals that are coming up, did you see this one in Baltimore? I have the article pulled up right now, but there's this this property. It's 100 North Charles. It's a skyscraper in Baltimore. It's been listed for auction for $1.5 million. It's a skyscraper, dude. It is like a legitimate skyscraper, you know, big building. And starting bids, $1.5 million. There's a one that sold recently down the street for $24 million, okay? Which was a decrease from 8 years earlier at $66 million, okay? And currently they're trying to sell this one at auction for $1.5. It's 23 stories, 346,000 square feet for $1.5 million. So like, theoretically, if this thing was occupied 8 years ago, it should have been worth close to $60 million bucks. And now they're trying to offer it for 1.5. Has there ever been like a change in perceived value like that with real estate in anything? That's insane.
That is insane. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the percentage of like swings have been in history on stuff like this. I would go and venture to guess Baltimore. Like, I haven't been there in a long time, but I've heard it's not a very nice town.
Yeah, and that bridge just got knocked down by that tanker, so it's even worse now.
Right? You can't get in or out anymore, dude.
They're selling
their shit. That's crazy, like, though. That's crazy.
And I mean, that is going to auction, so it will no doubt get bid up to a higher price. But the fact that they are making that the starting price is, like, unbelievable.
Right.
They're currently selling this 346,000 square foot skyscraper for the same price as a 3-bed, 1-bath home in Seattle. Right. It's insane.
No, I see. I'm looking at some of these other buildings too. It is nuts. And then meanwhile, you come to Spokane where we're at and they're trying to sell a 3-unit commercial retail space for $3 million. It's under rented by $20 a foot and there's 10-year leases on it. And you're like, really? Come on, guys.
Yeah. I think it's like, the commercial real estate, more than anything, just shows the incredible
stupidity of people.
Well, the stupidity of people, but like the variability that you see across location.
Yeah.
Because like residential homes will obviously have some variation, but on average, you know, it typically aligns with what the income is of the people that live there.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
and so each place will have like its prices that are upper class, its prices that are lower class, and all the stuff that's in between. But the commercial real estate does not. It's purely based off of the value that you can get from, you know, the tenants that you can put in those properties and the rental rates you can get on a commercial level.
You know what I have thought, though, like after you and I have been doing kind of a dive and learning about commercial real estate is a lot of times people say like, oh, I want to get into commercial real estate. It's just more sophisticated. It's like, no, I personally think at a mid-level, people buying like, you know, A-class skyscraper apartment buildings, that's institutions, right? That's different.
Yeah.
I'm talking like your typical strip centers. I'm talking about the dentist office down the road. I'm going to like say this. I think there's actually more dumb people doing that. They just have more money.
100%.
They just have more money. And they're people that are like doctors and lawyers who are smart enough to say, I don't want to deal with the tenant in flushing, you know, crap down my toilet. So I'm instead going to invest over here. And a lot of times, if you're not a savvy investor, like their returns are worse, they buy them more poorly, and then they are willing to sit on them from an ego standpoint to not lose money.
Yeah.
They'll sell a building that should be sold for $2 million. They'll sit on it for 2 years trying to sell for $3
million. I mean, that's absolutely true. People exploit that, right?
Yeah,
ways that they raise money, or, you know, Matt Onofrio.
Yeah.
If you guys haven't heard about who that is, go give him a Google. He was somebody who was extorting incredible amounts of money, is doing time for... was it mortgage fraud? I think is what they eventually got him for. But his whole model was he would wholesale these commercial deals to what, you know, you call dumb investors, like dumb big money, pretty much. They would be people that have a medical practice or they have some kind of business that is not connected to real estate at all, but they have a ton of cash. He would oversell them the deals because he would sell them on like these tax benefits and these other things. And like he would even like falsify leases to like make it look like the cap rates were higher. But because they're willing to park the money, it's a higher asset. They've been hearing, you know, all these big gurus talk about the power of commercial real estate and how you can increase the value by increasing rents and those sort of things and the passivity of it because you have these triple net tenants in them that you can absolutely do that. You know, they do. They park money. They sit there. They're not willing to lose it. It's non-recourse debt. So if they do lose it, they're like, I guess that I'll just walk away and still keep my house. Whereas on the residential end, you don't see that quite as much.
Totally. There's a lot more on the line in a lot of those cases, for sure.
Yeah.
And I do think that for like the good residential off-market operators, they are typically more talented than a lot of the folks I see, even on the commercial real estate side, like agents and all that sort of stuff. Like there's just less, they don't work as hard and they're not as big of problem solvers.
For sure. Well, I will say though, that the people that are the good problem solvers, that are the good operators in the commercial space, they are way richer than the residential good operator.
Oh yeah. I think about guys like Mattie A, who were
100%
part of his group, and like he is taking underperforming assets and repositioning them and making piles of money doing it.
Totally, right? And because you can do the same general process but make multi 7-figure paydays instead of needing to do, you know, 50 deals to make a 7-figure payday.
Yeah, the difference in that I found is, you have to be even better networker and you have to connect with the right people and you have to get them to believe in you and what you can bring to the table, because a lot of the commercial agents will just kind of like, they'll slough you off. They won't even talk to you like until you prove to them that you're actually going to make them money.
Yeah.
Where a residential agent, there's so many out there. You could bend the ear of 20 of them and make them walk houses with you or list houses for you overpriced, and you'll never run out of agents willing to do that for you.
Yeah. Hey, we really appreciate you being a listener of the Collecting Keys podcast. Did you know that we also are on social media and on YouTube? You should go and shoot us a follow on those as well. You can find both Dan and I on Instagram. I am at Mike_invests. Dan is at InvestorMan. Dan, you can also find short clips from the show at Collecting Keys Podcast on Instagram. And if you want to see our faces talking when you're listening to this show, or you want to check out some of our crazy animated adventures we've been putting together into some funny little web cartoons that sort of show the crazy stories that guests tell on the show, then you should go over to YouTube and check out the Collecting Keys channel. Shoot us a subscribe over there. It really helps continue to grow our audience. We really, really appreciate it. Well, anyways, enjoy the rest of the show, you guys. We appreciate you all. The other thing that I really struggle with like the commercial and even like large multifamily sort of stuff, is the amount of patience that you have to have. Because like realistically, a lot of those guys, they will work for years sometimes to get one deal, all right? Or like for them, it's like a good goal to do like one or two deals in a year.
Yeah.
Right? And like we're used to doing 20 a month.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
To understand the timeline that it takes to go through, you know, not only the networking, but to hunt deals, and like realistically, 99% of the ones that you see, you're not going to have an interest in.
Yeah.
And then when you do find it, you have to contract and you get an accepted offer, which is not always easy. Then you have to raise money for it and do your due diligence. And there's a huge probability they're going to fall out after you're doing due diligence. You're not going to be able to get the money, or you're going to find something in their fake pro forma that they sent you that isn't fully true.
Of course.
And then after you get past that, you have to go and get financing if you're not putting it cash. And there's about a 50% chance that your lender is going to be like, actually, we don't like this deal for one reason or another. We don't like you for one reason or another. And now you have to start over or back out. You know, and there's all these stories. Like, I feel like commercial guys always say this is kind of a thing that stands out to people that are not in that space. Is they'll say, yeah, I put $30,000 in due diligence on that property and I walked away.
Yeah.
But that's part of the game.
It is.
You know, and for me, I guess not having a proof of concept, it's really, really hard for me to get excited about that.
Yeah.
Right. And even though I understand like the larger potential and the long-term upside of owning that asset, I'm just like, but there's so many ifs. Whereas like, I feel like with the residential side, because we have the system so unlocked, we don't have very many ifs. They're all whens. I know that we will find a deal.
There was a lot of ifs when you bought your first property, but those ifs go away pretty quickly because
in
the general life cycle of a residential deal is so much faster. So you learn quicker.
And the exit is easier. If something goes bad, you just sell it and you take a loss and you get, you know, at least a good chunk of your money back.
Yes.
Right. Or like if something does go really sideways, you can at least just talk to a couple people and get enough money to get out of it.
It's true.
Like we had to do with these sub two deals that got called.
Yeah.
Right. That was pretty much the worst case scenario. We had to come up with what, 800 grand. But that's a reasonable amount of money versus if you own an $8 million property and all of a sudden something goes wrong and you have to figure out how to come up with $3 million to get out of it. Like that's a problem.
I was reviewing this within one of the accountability groups I'm in, this like $27 million like industrial facility. I was like, I don't even know where to begin on where to like, what do you do? Like, what if that goes bad?
I know.
Like,
yeah. It's non-recourse debt, bro. You just walk away and say, sorry, guys. Sorry, investors. Your money's going on.
Yeah, I'm just like, I don't even know where to start. Because like, if you're trying, you're like, well, I'm speculating that if I can get this deal, then I can get this, these leases leased up at this price, this deal would be this.
That's
you know? And it's like, man, there's a lot of what ifs in that process when you're talking about a $27 million industrial space in town, whatever, across America. It's like crazy.
The problem is, right, is Sino reference is if you're doing residential, honestly, you're paying penny slots. You can spend it like a bunch of times. You get a lot of things. Every now and then you'll get a winner.
Yeah.
Half the time you'll get nothing. The thing is when you're doing like commercial stuff, you're doing like $1,000 slots.
Yeah.
Like when you hit, you're going to make a shit ton of money.
Yeah.
But you're going to have to spend a lot of time just to even get the capital to get started, to start playing that game.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to come in with a, you got to come in with a suitcase of $100 bills.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So, you know, and they're not going to be giving you free drinks while you're going either. You're going to have to be pouring your own drinks and going to walk to the bar.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So it's interesting to sort of see all that pan out though. Cause
it is.
I mean, also in Baltimore, which apparently is the new Detroit, there's been a lot of talk about how they're selling those houses. You can buy like blocks of houses for a dollar.
Cool.
Have you seen that? And they're giving like up to $50,000 incentives per house to do renovation. And then you look at these houses and like, it's hell of a lot more than $50,000.
Right. You're like, oh, that sounds great. And then it's actually just to build a new house.
Yeah. But they're like the old East Coast row houses. You can't just like knock it down and build a new one.
It would be pretty cool to go own a block.
I mean, we could do that. I don't know. Like,
if I want to own a block of houses in Baltimore.
Just think about it. It's $100. You go and you buy 100 houses. Who cares? Dude, it's all about stacking that door count, right? Bro. I'm going to go and spend $1,000 and be like, here's how I bought 1,000 properties for $1,000.
All right. I got Zillow open. And I mean, there's some, I'm looking at 250K houses. Where are you talking to these dollar houses at?
Just says, look up like Google, like $1 house, Baltimore.
Okay. Now I'm in the 30K. You got to go to the south side. Okay.
Yeah.
You got to go. Yeah. Okay. I got some $30,000 houses, some $10,000 houses.
Yeah. Baltimore silly selling vacant houses for a dollar.
You just have to pay a shit ton of taxes. Dude, this is like a multifamily for 10K. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying, dude. Let's just invest and boost those numbers for the gram.
Dude, all I can tell is it has spaces for 4 front doors. All the windows are broken out. The doors are just like pieces of plywood. But it is a stone exterior. So like that looks solid. But every single window on this thing is broken. It's a fourplex.
That's crazy.
For 10K.
Man, that's just, I mean, that's a part of the country. It's, you know, that just exists like that. It's crazy. If you listen to this and you go, I'm going to go buy a fourplex for 10K. The thing's only going to be worth 50K when it's fixed up. It's going to take you 200 grand to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sure you might be able to cash flow this thing like a beast, but you're going to have a hell of a lot of money locked in there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not worth it. Otherwise, everybody would be talking about Baltimore.
I mean, they might at some point. People talk about Detroit now.
That's true. They do.
There was a similar scenario not that long ago where there was houses in Detroit that were in Detroit that were being bought up for a dollar.
I think for that all to happen, I think what ends up happening is the government steps in and provides the strategy that seems to work in the capitalist environment is they provide the major employers there an incentive to basically produce more labor, right? And so you look at the American motor manufacturers, that's like Detroit. And so the government has obviously helped them coming out like the 2008 crisis and all that sort of stuff. You've got these battery car incentives that you see coming out. So they're building all that sort of stuff. And so I think, I don't know what Baltimore's industry is, but I would assume now that it's like a dying city, they're going to need some bridge builders at the very bare minimum.
Yeah. You ever watch that show, The Wire?
The Wire? No, I don't think so.
On HBO, it's a good show. You should watch it. But that's based in Baltimore.
Is it?
And it's like a cop show. And so based on that, I'm assuming that the main industry in Baltimore is drugs. Because that's my only context. And Baltimore's a really sort of shitty, rough place in that show. And that's like a show from the 90s or early 2000s. So that's old. And it still hasn't gotten any better.
I mean, the government started incentivizing heroin use in the I-5 corridor in Seattle, Portland, San Francisco.
Oh, my God.
That helped the industry grow massively. The heroin industry. The drug industry.
The wrong kind of industry. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I was at a conference last week in Charleston, South Carolina. It's a cool city. I know a lot of people really like it.
I imagine a lot of cannons. Do they have cannons around town?
They do. They literally have an area you can go visit. It's called the Battery. And it's like the edge of the city, right where all the cannons were that they would like defend the city with. And they have cannons there. I don't know if they're real or they're fake or whatever. Of course, it was under construction when I went there because they're renovating it for the busy summer season when everyone goes and does their American history tour on the East Coast.
Right.
Yeah. So I was over there and Southern United States. It was for a GoBuns event that was regional. So it was all people that are from there. And I just love it when people in that part of the world talk about the homeless problem. I was like, I've seen one homeless guy since I've been here.
Yeah.
You're like, you come to the Northwest, we have thousands of them are in the parks, like outside the nice restaurants you want to go to, you'll see the homeless people.
On top of that, we have like normal people that want to look homeless in this area. Like that's the style. Like,
you can't even tell.
Yeah, right? Exactly. We just all look homeless up here. Everyone's got beards.
And when they might be, you know, you're like, I'm in this restaurant and my waitress has track marks. Like she might be homeless. I have no idea.
She might be homeless. I do know I'm going to pay $90 for this plate of food though.
Yeah, right. it was a good conference though. And it was one of the things that's always interesting for me as an entrepreneur and real estate investor that most of my network's in the Northwest.
Uh-huh.
Is when I go to places, and Charleston's a very expensive city now. There's been a lot of growth there. But like the people that live there are different than like the Northwest crowd because I feel like they're like legitimate entrepreneurs. So the whole thing with this GoBundance event was it was meant to be like to see, you know, for everyone there that's part of GoBundance to connect. And like we did a thing on the second day where we went and like toured people's local businesses, things like that.
Yeah.
And if you come to like the Northwest or California, honestly, even like Texas, some of these like really larger metros, everyone that has like the net worth and sort of business requirement for GoBundance, they're either full-time real estate or they're like a high income W-2 with that has done real estate investing over the past couple of years and built up that net worth, right?
Yep.
And very rarely do you see like people that have like a true sort of like standard business where they provide a service and they do something, especially brick and mortar. You don't see that at all. But when we were down there, it was like the opposite. So many of the guys had these really interesting just businesses that were innovative, or even if they were like traditional businesses that they have scaled it out and optimized it.
Yeah.
Like one dude had a series of donut stores.
Hell yeah. I love donuts.
He runs it out. Everyone likes donuts, but I'm like, I never would have thought of that as like a business that will make you rich. But he was going through like the costs about what it takes to make a donut and what they sell them for and how they determine their location so that they get a lot of foot traffic and all these things. His good stores make like 20 grand a month net.
That's awesome.
To him.
That's great.
Dude. He has like 7 or 8 of them.
That shit wouldn't fly in the Northwest though. Down there, down South, they do way better margins because people have, you know, bigger bellies.
Yeah. I mean, I think that definitely helped.
Yeah.
You know, but then on the contrary, there was another guy, him and his wife, they have these like smoothie chain that they run. They're called bomb bars, right? Because they make their smoothies with these little like smoothie bombs, they're called. And they're like these little things that are like dried food. And they actually have really good ingredients. But you put that and you can get those, you can buy like the little smoothie bombs separately on Amazon and stuff. And like super good product, really good story, like just like true entrepreneurship around how they went to get the things manufactured and all this stuff. And they're like young people. I'm like, I don't know why we don't see a lot of that in the Northwest.
Well, that's tougher business environment, right?
Maybe. Or maybe it's like the fact that our real estate has allowed us to be financially comfortable that we don't have the desire.
The entrepreneurial.
To do that.
I don't know. Yeah. Well, I mean, also down in Charleston, they don't have Amazons and Microsofts and Googles and all the big companies.
They have Boeing?
Yeah, but you know how that is. It's basically why they have so many donut shops down there.
I mean, you're not wrong.
I don't know. I'm just speculating. I have no idea.
Yeah.
I do think that it probably is like a regional thing. I think there's probably also something to be said about like where small business can thrive. There's probably something. It's like certain cities like incentivize it to where it's better. We're like, where we're at in Spokane, I can't speak to the Seattle area in Washington, but like I feel bad for a lot of the restaurant owners where we're at because it's really hard. I mean, restaurants in general are kind of like the main small business you see when you're in like at least our town. Like they're really tight in a business like that. And then we also have kind of a cost sensitive population when it comes to dining out.
Yeah.
But we have some awesome restaurants, but you're going to have to pay extra money to go to those awesome restaurants, the ones that don't have the Red Robin logo on the outside.
Sure. I mean, and down there, to be fair, food stuff was expensive.
Was it?
It was like the same price as up here. Yeah. Like if you went out somewhere and you got like a beer or something, it was $8.
Surprise.
Or like, you know, I went to the gym one day with the GoBundance guy I was crashing with down there. And we went and got like just a breakfast burrito at a coffee shop afterwards. And the breakfast burrito I got plus the coffee was, I think it was $18-19. Like it wasn't cheap.
What do you think that they pay the people down there then?
Less than they pay up here.
That's why I'm curious, because like our minimum wage is like $16-17, but if the breakfast burrito costs the same up here as it does down there, their margins are maybe better.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. Well, I know the thing that gets people in Washington is that B&O tax, which is a tax on like gross revenue, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, they definitely have that. I don't know. Well, did any of those guys own an ice cream shop? Because that's one of my bucket list items. I got to buy an ice cream shop.
I don't think so.
It's going to be somebody in GoBundance.
Yeah. There probably is like the ice cream tycoon that we don't know.
I know.
You just got to find out who they are. But my point being, I don't know. I'm curious to hear what anybody else's opinions are on that too and what other places are. Because like also a lot of people I've met from like the Northeast, they're also seem to be very real estate driven.
Yeah.
Or they're in finance, right? Like they're in something that is around money.
Financial basis, yeah.
Yeah, you don't see a lot of people that have like these random brick and mortar businesses anymore.
Yeah.
Unless they're acquiring them or they're doing them at some kind of like mass scale.
Right.
Like, these ones are all ones that were like founded from the ground up that they like built out.
That is super cool. That is really cool. I like to see that.
Just a different culture. Yeah. It was cool. And Charleston's a fun city too. Like super flat, which is weird for me, but
no
cool
hills.
To see how old it was. Yeah, no hills. Good environment. Lots of young people. Like definitely lots going on.
Well, I think just to wrap that conversation up, like you and I were talking this weekend about it a little bit, and there is something to be said about like, if you're in like a coastal city, I mean, Charleston's kind of there, but like the West Coast in particular in the Pacific Northwest recently has gone, like a lot of people that tend to be at the forefront of like the millionaire real estate folks like it happened in the last 5 years for them because real estate prices shot through the roof in this area for the first time in kind of a while, to be honest, certainly our market. And so you have all these people that have some level of like wealth, but they didn't really do anything besides play in the real estate pool. Like they wouldn't be the ones starting that brick and mortar business and being successful because it's challenging to do, to say the least.
It is.
But these people kind of ended up in similar spots, just different paths.
Yeah. I mean, and with that same direction, right? I would say that if you are a new person looking to casually build wealth, real estate is probably not the best way to do it right now, right? You need to be doing it on some kind of like serious level where you are actively trying to force appreciation or buy properties at discount.
Yeah.
Because like the people that, what a lot of us did in these areas where we just like were buying properties, you know, 6, 7, 8 years ago or longer, and the growth that we've had, that's not going to happen again. And now it's not probably not going to happen. You're also probably not going to be able to get like just cash flow. Dude, I remember like back then, and we bring it full circle back to going through our memory on stuff. We'd be like, man, I don't buy anything that's less than a 15% cash on cash return.
Yes.
Can you imagine finding a 15% cash on cash return property off the market with current interest rates?
It's definitely tough. There's not enough arbitrage on the rates.
It's impossible.
Yeah.
It's literally impossible.
You have to buy it at such a deep discount that the numbers, you'd be stupid to not buy it for that reason. I am curious though, because part of me still thinks like there are some markets and we know guys that we help market for where there is cash flow in their market so they can still buy because their properties are so cheap. You know, sub $100,000 acquisitions for houses that need $5,000 and $10,000 of the work.
Yeah. But I will also say that if you are somebody that is actively trying to learn how to do this, you probably don't live in one of those markets.
A lot of people don't, Aaron. You're right.
Right. They are few and far between. And obviously we know people, we have people in our scale community that live in these markets that are absolutely crushing it right now. But that's like, I don't want to say luck. It's like just circumstantial for like why they're there. You know, if you're in a position where you're actively trying to learn how to create wealth through real estate, which you probably are if you listen to this show, I'm imagining that you live in some kind of major metro or you live somewhere where that's probably not possible. So, yeah, I don't know. Or maybe I'm just completely pontificating. If you do live in a smaller market and you're like, I think I have those opportunities, I just can't figure it out, let me know because I'd love to help you get there because those are the best people to work with.
I do think Midwest is still a cash flow market. Some are not anymore. We have to look at that. And so if you want to be in the Midwest, but you don't live there, like Mike is saying, you have to learn how to do this shit virtually. And that is not the average person.
It's not.
You need to dig your heels in, you need to figure it out. And it seems average to us because we're around people that do it, but it's not the average investor that's looking to learn how to do real estate. Because it's like an extra step.
Yeah. It's not something you can do casually, right? Yeah. Like it's not something where you can just like look at properties on like a Saturday and decide you're going to make an investment. Like you need to be actively networking, actively building relationships there. And we have, you know, several people in scale that have done that. And we've done this ourselves as well. Yeah, it goes back to what I'm saying before, just to be the old days where you're like, I'm going to go to a meetup once a month and connect with a realtor who's going to send me props every once in a while. And that's what I used to build wealth. You're going to be looking for a very, very, very long time.
You're going to go to this local meetup and there's going to be a bunch of liars there telling you all the cool shit that they're doing.
Yeah.
And then they're going to try to get you to buy their badass deal. And then it turns out they're not actually doing any cool shit and they're lying to you.
Exactly. You're going to have some guy up on stage that has a really unfortunate tooth to gum ratio that's going to really have a great sales pitch for you. And you're going to be fully bought into it. And it's going to be the worst thing you've ever seen.
They're going to teach you how to find deals for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. That's definitely not a weirdly specific comment.
That was so specific.
I'm just saying in general, there's a look. You can just tell, right?
Yeah, there is a look on these guys. I still remember actually going back to the first meetup. Did I take you to the first meetup I went to in Spokane? And the dude was a slick Rick, man. He was selling the whole time. Like he was just.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I remember that out in the valley.
Yes. What was that guy? His name was Chris something. What was his?
Yeah. He's in jail.
Is he really?
Yeah. Because I knew somebody.
Either financial fraud or child stuff.
It was financial fraud.
Okay.
But yeah, Chris McIntosh.
There you go. That was it.
I'll put him on blast all day. Go look him up. Chris McIntosh. Okay. You'll see that he went to jail. But yeah, I know several people that like did deals with him from that. And he was like just embezzling money. Yeah. He was like the kind of guy that would raise money from somebody to do a deal and then would never actually.
Yeah, he would just straight steal people's money.
I hope this isn't the same person. candidate for Spokane County Commissioner?
Probably. You can't ask in Washington State, you can't ask if you have a criminal record anymore, so.
Oh my God. Yeah, it might be him. Yeah, so, well, if that is him, then fuck me.
That's kind of looks like him.
Dude, I think it is.
It is him, yeah. That's the same age.
No
yeah.
way.
Yeah, buddy.
Like, literally the known real estate criminal that I know has stolen money from people yeah. is running for office in our town. He's like, yeah. it's the same as his LinkedIn that's tied to his Next Gen REI. God damn it.
Dang it, dude. That's politics right. for you, baby. They're all disgusting pigs out there.
I can't believe that.
Oh, dude. Yeah, he was bad. Like, I remember, and I don't remember how I got onto his meetup, but like, I was like, oh, yeah, let's go to the meetup. And yeah, he actually would get a pretty solid turnout too.
Yeah.
Everything was like the sales pitch to like do his like Next Gen or whatever he called. And you'd go to like his personal house and like sit in a circle and talk about real estate. He'd coach you on how to do it. And then he'd bring in these other dudes. The total like, hey, we're taking a busload of people to go down to the auction and we're going to help you buy auction properties. And then they just do their whole sales pitch. Like, that was the whole thing. I was like, ooh, this is not my yeah. style.
And he was just looking for people to give him money and then you'd flip the house together. And then he promises you'll pay you back afterwards. So you don't need a deed of trust. Like, we're going to be a JV agreement on this and I'll pay you. But those aren't enforceable by anything. So that sucks.
What if they're back?
Man, that's throwback. Yeah, that was literally the first ever meetup we went to. I remember that. Funny.
It was.
Anyway.
Good times.
And now he's running for city commissioner. So
all that to be said, be careful what you listen to, even when you go to meetups, because there's a reason why people go to meetups. And I always love what Alex Hormozi says. How does it go? It's like, I'm at a loss, but it's like basically when experience finds money, experience always gets the money.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that's very, very true.
Yeah. And when you're coming in there with no experience, you have money, and someone there's with experience asking for your money, there's a good chance they're going to get it and you're not going to have any left.
Yeah. That's very valid. So yeah. And then I guess to finish up with an action item is if you do want to get into real estate right now, you need to do it seriously as a business. If you're doing it casually and you listen to the show and you're a casual investor, go find some other shows to listen to as well. Yeah. So listen to us, but go find other ones because you should probably expand your horizons.
Yep.
Because if you're a casual investor, it's going to be very, very tough. And it's probably going to be easier right now, I think, if you learn to do anything with business that probably isn't real estate if you're like super green. Unless you're like, I want to focus on the wealth building side as well and you want to pursue getting discounted assets, then that's definitely super viable. But if you just want to be like a cash flow, like buy and forget it guy, it's probably not time to do it right now.
Time to. So true. So.
Cool, guys. Well, thanks for listening. We appreciate all of your time. Please go and share this show with anyone who might find it interesting. And we'll talk to you guys next week.
See y'all.